Science Shapers, conversations with science fiction and fantasy authors about the creative process. I'm your host, Edward Willett, and this episode's guest, Noah Levelson. Welcome to another episode of The World Shapers, the podcast where I talk to science fiction and fantasy authors about their creative process. I am myself an author of science fiction and fantasy. My name is Edward Willett, although I've also written as E.C. Blake and Lee Arthur Chain. My most recent books from a major publisher were the World Shapers books from Daw Books, World Shaper, Master of the World, and The Moonlit World. And my next Daw Books novel will be The Tangled Stars, which is a humorous space opera that will be coming out next year. I also recently released a young adult science fiction novel called Star Song from Shadow Paw Press, and that's available now, as are many other titles which I put out through Shadow Paw Press. It's a way that I can bring back some novels of mine that have been orphaned by publishers that went out of business or that rights came back to me and all that sort of thing. However, Shadow Paw Press also publishes something else, and this is very exciting for me as the proprietor, I guess you'd say, of this podcast. I have twice now kickstarted an anthology featuring short fiction by guests of this podcast. Shapers of Worlds came out about this time last year. It had stories, new fiction from Shauna McGuire, Tanya Huff, David Weber, Ellie Modisett Jr., DJ Butler, Christopher Rocchio, John C. Wright, Shelley Adina, and me, plus stories by John Scalzi, David Brin, Joe Haldeman, Julie Isherneda, Fonda Lee, Dr. Charles E. Gannon, Gareth L. Powell, Derek Kunskin, and Thorea Dyer. That was so successful that this year I kickstarted Shapers of Worlds Volume 2, which is a full third, just about, longer than the original one. It's 140,000 words of fiction. And there is new fiction from Kelly Armstrong, Marie Brennan, Helen Dale, Candace Jane Dorsey, Lisa Foyles, Susan Forrest, James Allen Gardner, Matthew Hughes, Helly Kennedy, Lisa Kessler, Adria Laycraft, Ira Naiman, Garth Nix, Tim Pratt, Edward Savio, Brian Thomas Schmidt, Jeremy Schall, and me again, and reprints from Jeffrey A. Carver, Barbara Hambly, Nancy Kress, David D. Levine, S.M. Sterling, and Carrie Vaughn. That's Shapers of Worlds Volume 2 from Shadow Paw Press, and it will be coming out November 2nd. So this is the last podcast that I'm putting out before that book comes out, because it'll be 2 weeks until the next podcast. So Shapers of Worlds Volume 2, available in paperback, hardcover, and ebook, wherever fine books are sold. You can certainly order it through any online bookstore. And if you went and talked to your local bookstore, they could bring it in. Also your library, if you wanted to point it out to them, they could bring it in and get it on their shelves. Shapers of Worlds Volume 2, I'm very excited about that, and I hope that you will check it out and enjoy some of the terrific fiction that my guests have created or provided for that anthology. And I think that enough of the introductory material. That's kind of my big thing I want to talk about is Shapers of Worlds Volume 2, so check that out. Oh, I know what I forgot to say. The other way to get it, you can go to shadowpawpress.com or any bookstore, or if you want a handy link for ordering it, pre-ordering it, you can do that at bookstoread.com, numeral 2, so bookstoread.com/shapersofworlds2, and again, numeral 2 at the end of that. So bookstoread.com/shapersofworlds2 is a handy link that will point you to lots of places where you can get Shapers of Worlds Volume 2. And I've already started contacting authors for Shapers of Worlds Volume 3, names like, Cory Doctorow, Walter John Williams, Cap Rambo, people like that. I've already said that they will be part of it with either original or reprint fiction. All right, that's enough of an introduction. I do just have to remind you that the World Shapers podcast is part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. And now let's get on to this episode's guest, Noah Levelson. Noah Levelson is a short story writer and novelist who lives in L.A. with his wife and cat. He's a lover of science fiction, fantasy, new weird, and punk. Received his B.A. in biology from the University of Chicago in 2014 and his M.F.A. in creative writing from the California Institute of the Arts in 2020. He's had several of his short stories published in both print and online magazines such as Allegory's Space Squid in the Outsiders Within Horror Anthology, Horror Anthology. And we're going to talk about his new novel. So, Noah, welcome to The World Shapers.
Thank you for having me.
So I will start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. as they say in The Sound of Music. And with your background, where you grew up, and how you got interested in writing science fiction and fantasy, usually reading comes first. Was that the way it worked for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I loved reading kind of science fiction and fantasy as a kid. My dad read me Lord of the Rings. I was big into Harry Potter for a while, as most were of my generation. And then I started, you know, expanding my reading some other, some young adults, like the Bartimaeus trilogy, but I really got into, you know, adult science fiction. So I read a lot of Heinlein, because that was my dad's favorite. A little bit of Asimov, all the classics. Later, I got really into Stanislaw Lem and Ursula Le Guin, are two of my favorites.
Those are all my generation of authors.
Yeah. It's a good generation.
Yeah.
Good generation. And then I was writing a little bit in high school, but got more into it in college, where I take short story writing classes. Now I was at the University of Chicago studying biology for undergrad, which is a subject that's always interested me. And then post-graduation, I continued to take classes, some at UCLA Extension, which is a great program, and eventually just kind of pivoted more and more into my writing and kind of ended up dropping the research thing. I sort of realized that it was a subject of a lot of fascination for me, but I wasn't amazing at doing research. Research is definitely a specific skill set, and I respect people who can do it, but it requires certain skills. So I ended up going more and more into my writing, in part because I realized I'd always kind of conceptualized that, like, writing was a wildly risky job and academia was safe and sound. And that's somewhat true, but writing is a wild and dangerous and questionable job, but academia is, like, only marginally better is what I started to find out. And I was like, screw it. I want to write. This is what brings me joy. So I was lucky enough to be able to put in some time and even get into an MFA program at CalArts, which is where I completed this novel.
I was going to ask you about that. I often ask authors, if they've had formal writing training. Some have, some haven't. Of those who have, they don't always find it useful when they're writing this sort of thing. But you actually wrote your novel as part of that. So I would say that you did find it useful. Is that fair?
I did come in with a pretty significant draft of it already, which was definitely helpful. That being said, I did find CalArts very useful for meeting other writers and practicing writing and just being in a wonderful community. I'm not sure it prepared me much for the world of publishing, to be honest, but I think as working on my craft, I very much appreciated my experience there. But I'd say to, you know, any writer, I think the most important thing is to just have a community of some kind. I got in a writing group from my classes at UCLA Extension, other writers that we work together to work on this novel. And honestly, that's been pretty comparable to my entire MFA program and how useful that's been. And that's not a bashing on the MFA program. I'm just saying that, like, having a long-term community of writers who you can share work with and talk about things and, you know, bounce ideas off of and grow together is immensely valuable, regardless of whether that's in an institution or just with a group of writer friends.
You've had several short stories published. Did they start happening before that, or when did you break in with starting to actually place some stories?
Yeah, I just I was writing stories at UCLA Extension, I think, so sometime around then I just started trying to send stories off, and my first one, a flash fiction called The Monster Hunter, ended up getting picked up by Space Squid, which was nice, and that gave me a good boost in the arm, which I think was nice because, you know, then a bunch of my stories got absolutely nowhere, which I would say is the average experience. At least for me. But yeah, it's just about, I think, putting yourself out there and seeing what catches and what doesn't. because it's, you know, it's not always what you think will attract people's attention, and sometimes you just gotta try.
Do you still have this good? This kind of is getting into what we'll talk about in a little bit, but do you still have this a good group of writers that you bounce ideas off of? And is it a formal writing group or just sort of people you know who also write?
Yeah, we do have a formal writing group, which was people back from UCLA Extension, just friends, and that's kind of stuck together, and that's been very useful. We share novels and edit each other's novels and do stuff like that, short stories. So that's been very useful. I've had other more or less formal writing groups come together and fall apart in the past, but they've all been useful experiences.
You started at the University of Chicago. Did you actually grow up near Chicago somewhere?
No, I grew up in L.A., so I went to Chicago for school, and then once I was out, I'm like, I'm not freezing there in Chicago unless I have to, so I came back to L.A.
Yes. We were just talking before we started. It's actually snowing here today, so for the first snow of the winter. It won't stick, yeah. But it's been a pretty miserable day, so I can see the appeal. Lots of Canadians see the appeal to places like, Palm Springs and Florida and places like that.
Yeah, it's the Chicago cold, man. It hits.
Yeah, coming off that lake. Cuts. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit then about the novel. It's called The Cyclist City, published by Tiny Fox Press, and it had a great release date, July 20th, 2021, because my birthday is July 20th, so many good things have been launched on July 20th. Also, the moon landing, so there you go, that too.
Okay.
So this applies to all of your short stories as well, and it's the, you know, it's the question that everybody hates to ask, but it's a legitimate question. If you don't like where do you get your ideas, let's just say, what inspires you to start a story, and what inspired The Cyclist City specifically?
Yeah, that's, it's not that I mind asking, it's just I never have like a particularly great answer.
I don't think anybody does.
So for The Cyclist City, that was based on,
Before we do that, maybe you should synopsize The Cyclist City. We know what we're talking about. Our listeners do.
So it's been a while since I pitched it, so this is going to be rough. But it basically follows a private investigator in this sort of steampunky fantasy world that has a bit of a kind of rusty tinge. So it's a little grimier, a little more destroyed. Not quite as Victorian as some kind of steampunk novels. And he ends up discovering this conspiracy in the city he lives in that he finds out he might even have been complicit in without realizing. And this conspiracy also involves the other major character who I won't go into too much detail, but she's basically this kind of beast woman who wants to be an engineer, which in this world is basically a technology wizard, to put it simply. And she kind of takes almost a Faustian bargain to get this power, and that ends up connecting with this whole conspiracy that ropes in the private investigator, and they get caught up in the middle of it and have to find a way to extricate themselves and bring it all down.
Well, reading the description of it, there's some interesting things going on there. This ether oil, for example, it seems like an interesting concept. And I love the cover, too, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I did not do that.
Yes, but, I know.
I was very happy about that.
It's important. Okay, so let's back up again now. Where do you get your ideas? Let's go back to there again.
Yeah, so the world of... I came up with a setting for The Cyclist City when I was in high school, give or take. It was just a thing I was doing, just making up stuff for not really clear reasons. But I eventually sort of started to codify it and kind of write down my thoughts on it and how it would be sketched out. And so when I wanted to try my hand at writing a novel, I had a setting to work with. And then I ended up trying to find a structure of a story that would allow me to have characters from very different backgrounds that kind of explore the different aspects of the world. So the main character is a private investigator, but he was an ex-soldier for this one faction, which I call the Resurgence, or the United Citizens Confederacy. Of the Resurgence. Or not a confederacy, of the Citizens Resurgence, sorry, to be technical. So he kind of shows the kind of military situation and the kind of political sides in this world, while the other character shows more of the kind of the different species that inhabit this world and the kind of the magic system, which is based on what you described, this aether oil. Magic in this world is very industrial and, gritty and grimy. So it's all about being able to manipulate and enhance technology by burning this mysterious crimson substance, which kind of oozes up from the ground and kind of mutates things around it. And she is super into that, and that's her way of kind of proving herself and becoming the person she wants to be, is by becoming an engineer and being able to manipulate this substance and make fantastical technology. And I have other characters that appear, including a monk and future characters in future novels who kind of explore other aspects of the world.
Where do your characters come from? And this ties into the next question, which is, what does your planning, outlining process look like? How much background work did you do before you began to write? And how did your actual planning to write the novel look like? Did you do a detailed outline, or do you just start writing, or how does that all work for you?
Yeah, so this one was kind of a complicated story because it went through different forms. But the original form was based on I essentially wrote a series of short stories, giving the background for each character before I started writing. And I ended up weaving some of those short stories as kind of the first novel together, finding their commonalities and how they intersected.
Were those published short stories?
No, I never tried to get any of them published because I knew, I wanted them to be in the novel, and I knew, I probably could, maybe I could have tried, but then, I would have had things published that probably I would have changed by the time I got to the novel, because I want to edit and change things and right. Different ideas, and I don't know, I guess you don't go to writer's jail for retconning, but, I don't know. It would bother me to have wildly different versions of the stories out there. So I didn't try to do that. I just tried to work them together into the novel. And I was actually basing this on Hyperion by Dan Simmons, which itself is based on the Canterbury Tales, which I have not read, which I should. But it's a little easier to get into, sci-fi about future planets with robots than with Middle English old novels. I do intend to read that at some point. But so my initial structure was very much heavy in the flashbacks and kind of weaving the stories that way. But at some point in my first draft, I realized that this was just not the most effective way to tell the story. What I learned is it's very hard, especially as a new writer, to write characters out of order, to write the person they become before you describe the person they were and how they changed. That might seem obvious, but somehow that didn't hit me until I tried to do it, and I was like, this is, I don't know where they're at right now in their mind, and I have to go back and write that. I'm kind of weaving around the question. So essentially each draft I kind of made its own outline, but the exact structure that took depends on, it just depends on where I was in the novel, what I knew, what I needed to change. I tend to kind of do broad outlines, and then as I get to chapter to kind of say, okay, this is exactly what I'm doing in this chapter, and maybe even write out the beats. And I'm a disorganized person, so this tends to be just scribbled out really quick instead of in neat bullet points. But it does allow me to kind of know where I'm at, and know if I'm writing in the right direction.
The short stories you did for the characters, did you feel that it goes back to my question of where did you find your characters? How did you decide who the characters were that you needed in this world that you had created?
Yeah, so part of it was me trying to find kind of different kind of almost archetypes in my world, different kind of positions and point of views, and what sort of characters would have those different positions and point of views, and working from there. And by going through their short story, I was able to kind of discover who they were, what they wanted, and was able to use that to kind of weave the total narrative together, which was definitely an interesting way. I've since written another novel, which is currently in its draft form, which I did not do the same way, but it's definitely an interesting way to learn about your characters, to try to just get a full story out with them before kind of introducing them to each other in the wider world. Because I feel like sometimes characters can like step over each other, you know, when you have them all at once. It's nice to give them a little space to themselves in a kind of test tube to see who they are.
Well, it's a version of writing a detailed character sketch, mm-hmm. but more interesting than just, you know, making notes on their favorite color and what they like to wear and what they eat in the morning and stuff like that. I've never done that sort of thing, but I know some people do.
I just find it like sometimes with any outline and character outlines, they're sometimes not the person you think they are when you start writing, you know?
Yeah. And did they change then from those initial versions as you wove them into the story and developed the story? Did they change drastically from your initial concept of them?
To differing degrees, yeah. I think Sylvain, who's a kind of beast person engineer, is pretty similar to how she was at the beginning. I think Marcel went through some pretty drastic changes as I was trying to figure out, and he's the private investigator, what his deal was. I've had some other characters. I had this monk character who becomes increasingly important, who I had one version of him, and then I had a different character, and he ended up sort of cannibalizing aspects of this other character once I realized this other character wasn't really necessary. And it added some nuance, because it gave him some traits that seemed, on first blush, kind of contradictory, but the more I kind of wrote it, the more they kind of made sense as a kind of logical internal contradiction, if that makes sense.
How detailed was your plot in your mind before you began? You knew where it was going to end, or was there a process of discovery along the way with that as well?
I wrote my first draft of the novel was essentially what would become this whole trilogy I'm working on. So I actually knew how it would end from the beginning. And then I've kind of sketched in each part in more detail as I've gotten to it. But I attempted to, for some reason, I thought I could do all the things I'm doing in three books in one book when I first started, because I hadn't written a novel before and I didn't realize, you know, how they worked. I was like, I can get that all in. It turns out I could not. So it's definitely been a process of kind of broader sketches into more detailed, sections.
Well, that brings up the question, what has been the most surprising thing to you about writing your first novel? What really surprised you about the process?
That's a good question. I had to think about that for a second, because it's a lot of little surprises. I think definitely realizing the kind of structure changes, realizing that you can rewrite. It's okay to rewrite most of your book. It's not something I really wanted to do. I was like, this is good. But, you know, you grow as a writer, you change. And you end up having to redo large sections. And eventually, I think I rewrote everything at least once or twice, completely ground up, which is something I might have to learn again for this other novel I'm working, because I'm in the same boat I was before, where I don't want to touch anything I don't have to, but I feel like I will probably end up just redoing a whole bunch of it, just so it all fits together. So definitely that. I think I realized what was surprising is it was how difficult it can be to sum up what your novel's about once you're in it. It can actually be easier, I think, to see what a novel's about when you're outside the novel, when you're looking in. But when you're in the middle of it, writing it, it can sometimes be hard to condense all the different things you're doing into a single byline or even a paragraph.
Do you prefer short stories or novels now that you've written two novels, working on the second one?
Short stories are nice because they let you complete a full thing and feel satisfied and get it out there. I do like, because I'm really into world building, and I like that novels allow you to paint a whole world in a way that you have to be much, much more economical with a short story. So it really depends on the mood, I think. Short stories are nice and iterative and you get them out there and it feels good to have, you know, to kind of collect them. But they require a very, very tight editing. You have to sacrifice a lot more, I think, to get everything in. Novels, you can be, you know, you can be a little more wasteful in a novel. Not too much, but definitely more than in a short story, and you can be a little more indulgent, and I do kind of like being indulgent.
Well, I saw in one of your interviews that one reason for all of this was because you really wanted to have this big world of your own that you could tell stories in. And that's something that in a short story, you can hint at this big world, but you can't really get into the in-depth world building. There simply isn't space.
You spend a page talking about what a city looks like, and it's like, well, that's like what? That's like a fourth of your story right there, man. You can't, you know, you can't do that.
That's right. So what does your actual writing process look like? Do you write, you know, with a quill pen under a tree, like Chaucer, or or in coffee shops, or what's your favorite mode of working?
Just a laptop, you know, wherever I can. I prefer to give myself a bunch of time at home to do it, but, you know, I've been working, I've been teaching recently at a middle school, so that does not give you all that much time, so it's kind of just whenever I get home, I just grab my computer, try to jot out something real quick, and then move on to the other things I have to do in the day. But ideally, you know, I like to give myself a couple hours, kind of ease into it. Realistically, what happens is I spend a large chunk of time not writing, and then the guilt of not writing eventually pushes my writing out.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Do you consider yourself a fast writer or a slow writer or somewhere in between?
I like to think I'm slow and steady. I don't think there's a right word count. My goal is usually like 500 words per hour. But I usually don't go more than like 1,000, 1,500 in a day. I just burn out at that point. I know some people are able to, like, just not write, and then they're like, today's the day I'm writing, and they get like 10,000 words. And I respect that, but it utterly baffles me. I cannot do that. So I try to just kind of plod along step by step.
Well, that's one of the...
Mm-hmm.
I should say that's one of the great things about this podcast is finding out all the different ways that writers work and realizing that there isn't any one way to do it. And slow and steady wins the race just as much as fast and furious.
Absolutely.
Over the long haul.
It's whatever. Some people can do both. Some people can be fast and steady, and those people are scary. I respect them, but my God.
Once you have a draft, what does your revision process look like? And does your writing group come in here somewhere for like beta readers and that sort of thing?
Yeah, the writing group has been really useful as beta readers, giving notes. Sometimes we go chapter by chapter. Sometimes we do the whole novel and give notes on it. And those, obviously, chapter by chapter is more a time investment, but it's very useful. Though there is a benefit for doing it all in one because it tends to get people thinking in the large scale kind of structural questions, the kind of big questions, which I think are the most important, especially early on in the draft. And then I just try to figure out what are the big changes I need to make, where to make them, and kind of go from there. And it's just kind of iterative of fix the things in one go around, then go around again and try to fix some more things, see things I've noticed, see things, ideas I've had. That's basically in the process so far. I'm starting again with this other book, and I'm hoping to start it with the sequel to The Sightless City soon. I've actually given a few chapters to some of my writing groups, so they seem to like it, so something to be excited for, hopefully. It's just kind of going back and forth, just over and over and over and over the novel, and if you don't hate your novel, then you probably haven't read it enough for it to be good. Yeah.
Are there any specific things that you find that you have to fix? Like, we all have bad habits that can creep into our narrative and things we have to watch out for. Do you have any of those?
I think so. I'm trying to. My
characters tend to, and this is just a copy editing or a line editing thing, but I tend to use animal noises too much for character speaking. They're always growling dialogue or snarling things. And I try to watch out for that. Unless it's a werewolf novel, then it's different. But, you know.
I have a lot of nodding and people's gaze changing, which I need to work on. I probably shouldn't have said that because now people will look and notice. And maybe I would have got away with it if I didn't mention it. So I'm definitely trying to mix that up and just see. When I overuse certain words, like sometimes they'll learn some cool word and suddenly appears like four times, like some ye old archaic word will appear four times in a page. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Why are they all, you know, you can toss one of those in, you can't have four of them. So just kind of going through and checking to see if there are things I'm redoing. You know, if the structure of the chapter makes sense. Just language, commas get me. Commas still drive me crazy. And I'm still trying to figure out capitalization for, like, species names, for, like, races and species in fantasy universe. The rules, I don't feel like, are entirely clear. And I'm trying to be consistent, but I know I've made mistakes.
You're a biologist. That should kind of be second nature there. Or at least your
it
biology
does,
major.
It does, but, like, I don't know, you can get away with, like, with animals, you can just, you know, use whatever, but then once you have sentient things, you don't capitalize humans, but you only got one group of humans, so do you treat it like a species, or do you treat it like a nationality group, or something else, you know? So that's always been my bugbear.
Are there any things that your readers, your writing group, are there things that they tend to comment on in your fiction that you go back and work on?
Let me think. They tend to be pretty nice. What I find most useful about kind of writing groups is just to, like, they give you a lot of, like, push for things that, like, may have occurred to you, but you don't really have, like, maybe that's okay. And then you, like, show it to them and they're like, no, don't do that. That doesn't work. And then that's the kind of push to be like, okay, instead of it's abstractly maybe a problem, into it's a very definite and real problem. But so far I haven't had too many. I try to fix my bad habits as much as possible.
Presumably you're reading their material as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that... I'm curious about writers' groups because I've never belonged to one. So do you find that that's helpful in your own fiction? Do you see things looking at other people's work that you are then able to apply to your own to improve it as you continue to write?
Oh, absolutely. I've definitely read some people's work and been like, God, I really hate it when characters do that. And I, like, look at my own novel and I'm like, oh.
Should
practice what I preach here.
I can apply to published work too, of course.
Absolutely. But it's definitely like, when we're giving notes, you're putting a lot of pressures put on you to try to, like, understand what's happening in the book and not just have reactions, but kind of understand why you're having those reactions. And that's definitely a skill that you can use on your own work. I find that very useful.
Yeah, it's a bit, I've been a writer in residence a couple of times at public libraries here in the province. And I find that looking really closely at, often beginning writers, but looking really closely at what's working and isn't working in their work, I still find that helpful and makes me more conscious of things in my own work. So I do think it's that sort of reading analytically that we don't always do when we're reading books just for fun. One of the hazards of becoming a writer is that you start to notice all that stuff in the books that you used to read just for fun, and it can sometimes take some of the enjoyment out of it because you start reading analytically when you'd like to just be reading for the story.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just invaluable because you can't just be like, I don't like it. You have to, like, why? What is not working? Or what is working? And it also is important to, like, understand what's working in a piece you didn't like. And all those skills end up being very useful for when you're checking your own work.
So once you had the finished novel, it's published by Tiny Fox. What was your process of looking for a publisher like?
I started by trying agents, and I just downloaded every name I could find that looked remotely decent, and sending things out. Sending out query letters, messing with my query letter, sending out query letters, and it's hard because you will get, or at least I did. I got, and people I know get a lot of rejections, and that seems to be the norm. And it can be tough to tell, like, when are you making a mistake in what you're doing? And when is it just like, that's just how it be sometimes,
You're just not what they're looking for at that moment.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll tell you, but for the most time, you just kind of have to accept silence or form rejections, because that's what you're going to get most of the time. That's hard.
You have some advantage back when I was doing that stuff. Because it was all by mail back then, which dragged the process out enormously.
Oh, don't worry. It still takes them like a year to get back to you. Well, they just have no reason.
Maybe it's worse because they get so much more now than when it was, people had to actually mail them a letter. Maybe they get more queries than they ever did before. I don't know.
Yeah. It's hard. I understand they get barraged, so I understand why it's the way it is, but definitely can be disheartening.
So did you not find an agent through that?
I did not find an agent, actually, but I ended up seeing Tiny Fox's name pop up, and I think it was a Duotrope email. That's a website that has a lot of this kind of information. And I sent it to them, and they bit. They liked it.
Those are the first publisher you sent it to.
I might have sent it to a couple other small presses as well, but I was mostly focusing on agents and then the occasional small press that looked up my alley. But there's a lot more agents than there are more agents in the kind of realm I was looking for than like open small presses, so it definitely outnumbered the publishers.
And what was your reaction when they said yes, they would like to publish it?
I was very excited and extremely stressed out, but it was all good. I didn't really know how to react, but it ended up being okay, and I was really, really thrilled that the book was going to finally be a real, actual book instead of a hypothetical on my computer book.
That, then, of course, once you've got a publisher, then comes their editing pass on it. Were there changes at that point?
There were some. It was not as much as I thought. In fact, mostly I think the editing I did during that period was based on notes I had. I think a lot of publishers, maybe agents too, they kind of want something in a pretty good shape. You know, they don't want to have to spend months editing it. So I think a lot of places will only take it if they feel like they don't have to edit it too much, which I guess Tiny Fox felt that because they only gave me a couple big notes, and then we went to do line editing.
And there's one question I had, because the book came out July 20th, but you won an award for it the year before. How did that work? You won the Ozma book
award. That was for unpublished.
Because I'm not familiar with that award, so.
I believe it's either for specifically unpublished books or open to unpublished books. I forget exactly, but I was trying to go to writers' conventions, because there's some in LA, just to see what I could learn. And I saw a stand for that. I'm like, well, why the heck not? So I sent my thing out, and I was surprised to see I actually did pretty well in that. And I definitely used that in my cover letter. I started slapping that at the front of the cover letter.
Yeah, I would think so.
So I have no idea if that's what got the attention or if it was entirely random, but it definitely didn't hurt.
Sounds like it ought to be from Australia, Ozma, or from Oz, but...
Ozma.
So, once the book came out, you've had some really decent reviews, and have you been pleased with the response to it?
Yeah, I've been happy so far. we got Publishers Weekly and Kirkus. We got some reviews from them. And then obviously from, you know, Goodreads and all that, which I do read, even though all sane advice tells you not to do it. And I agree you should not do it, but I have.
Oh, I read them, except the ones that are 1 stars. Then I don't subject myself to that necessarily. But
no, you should. There's nothing to be gained, but it's, I don't know. It's Pandora's box, right? You can't not open it.
Yeah.
At least I can. Yeah.
So with that out, you said it's a trilogy. So is that the book that you're working on now? The second book that you wrote, is that the second book in the trilogy, or is it something outside of the trilogy?
So when I didn't know if the book was going to get published, I was working on a different project. So I have been working on a separate project, unrelated, which I have a draft of, and I'm trying to finish up that. Once I got that done, I started to work on the sequel to this, because by then the book had been accepted by Tiny Fox. So currently I'm now working on the sequel to The Sightless City, which I'm close to the end of a first draft of. And getting some edits on.
Does it have a title?
I'd like to call it... I mean, it doesn't have a title until my publishers agree that this is the title. But the working title is The Lioness and the Rat Queen.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Catchy.
We'll see. We'll see. No idea if that sticks.
What about short stories? Are you still... writing some of those as well, or have you gone entirely to focus on the novels with your obviously somewhat limited writing time with, you know, having a job and all that?
I've been mostly focused on novels for now. I do very much want to get back to short stories, and I have some short stories that are like half edited that I'd love to work on again, and I've done a few in kind of intervening times, but right now I've been mostly focused on the novel.
And I guess that kind of brings us to our big philosophical questions then, at towards the end here. And there are three of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, why do you write? Why do you do this? I'll tell you all three, then you can think about it. The second one is, why do any of us do this? Why do any of us write? Why do human beings write? And then third one is, why science fiction fantasy? Why stories of the fantastic as opposed to stories of the non-fantastic? So those are the three big philosophical questions.
Yeah, those are good ones. I would say I think writing allows me to share parts of myself I can't really share otherwise. These kind of ideas and worlds in my head that I don't really have any other outlet for, because people aren't really willing to sit and listen to me ramble about some cool idea I had for 30 minutes. People have things to do, and I get that. So if I put it on paper and I put a story there and I make it actually good instead of rambling, then people can, then that's something I can actually share with people, which is, valuable to me. As for why humans write in general, I think we're a naturally storytelling species. I think that's pretty fundamental, both to the way we communicate, but also just the way we think and understand the world is through narratives and stories. And I don't know. I think it's something very wonderful about the human species. It is, as far as we can tell, unique. I don't know, maybe dolphins do, because who knows what they're talking about. But for the most part, it seems to be something unique to us. And it allows us to, I think, understand each other better in a way we couldn't, and understand the world and points of views that are distant from us. So I just think it's something deeply and fundamentally human to tell stories.
Well, this podcast is called The World Shapers. Do you think fiction actually has the power to, if not shape
absolutely.
The world, at least shape the people around us in a way?
I mean, absolutely. For better or for worse, I think we think of the world largely in narratives and histories and fights of good versus evil or different philosophies, you know. Almost any kind of understanding of the world, even the sciences, you know. One reason I love biology is it is a story. It's a story of life and the human species. And so are the other science. Physics, you can talk about the creation of the universe and how everything forms. I think narratives are just fundamental to how humans make sense of the world and interact with it. So I think stories are one of the biggest things in one way or another, that one of the fundamental ways the world changes through the stories being told and how we understand those stories and which stories are given precedence over others. So I consider it, you know, massively important.
How do you hope or think or wish that your writing would shape, if not the entire world, at least your readers? What do you hope they take away from it?
For me, growing up and reading these stories and just having my imagination and sense of possibility expanded by reading these works of science fiction and fantasy, that's kind of what I hope to give my readers too, just to kind of to be able to expand their horizon, to give them a sense that there is, you know, that there can be or is more than just what they experience, and give them tools and the ability to look and imagine what those alternatives could be. I don't want to get too high and mighty about my books changing everyone. But I want to entertain first and foremost. But you know, like everything, the book reflects real world values, real world thoughts and politics and musings on the world, and I hope to be able to, I hope that people, by reading that, are able to think more about the world in different ways and see commonalities and find something useful in that.
I think part of that answered applies to the third question, which we didn't quite get to because I went off on a tangent, which is why science fiction and fantasy? I mean, one reason is because that's what you grew up reading and you loved it, but on a bigger picture, why do you think, what's the impetus for any of us to write stories of the fantastic as opposed to, you can tell narratives about the world that don't involve things that don't actually exist or could never exist, and yet we keep going there. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about understanding, it's a couple things. I think one is understanding what could be. Especially science fiction is great for, you know, speculating about the future and expanding the possibilities of our understanding. And both fantasy and science fiction are great for exploring kind of philosophical conundrums and taking them kind of out of the dry academic setting and placing them, you know, giving them flesh and bones and love and hate and morality. Reading some Ted Chiang, and his stories are, you know, super philosophical, and a lot of great science fiction stories are, you know, questioning these notions of human nature and morality and the nature of reality itself in ways that are digestible, and I think in ways that humans think about them better, because I think the you know, I'm not bashing academics, but I think the kind of classroom can be a very, very stifling and artificial way of looking at things. I think people naturally think in stories and in experiences more than in dry theories. Once again, I'm kind of creating a dichotomy that's perhaps a bit harsh, because I respect academia, but I think there is, by giving these ideas flesh and bones and emotions, I think it becomes easier for people to think about them and maybe think about them in different ways. I think just expanding just our notions of the possible is an inherently good thing in my mind. And science fiction and fantasy are great at doing that.
And are they fun for you as well?
Absolutely.
Is writing fun for you?
Having written is very fun. I'll say that's what I'll say. Writing itself it's work like anything, but I very much enjoy having written.
That's the classic response to that, for sure. Mm-hmm. And we've mentioned a bit what you're working on. Is there anything else that you're working on that we haven't mentioned? You've got this novel that's not part of the trilogy, and the second book in the trilogy. Do you have any other plans for things that you're going to be working on?
That's mostly it. For now, I'd love to get involved in other projects. I'm hoping to do more kind of collaborative work. A couple people at CalArts are doing this kind of collaborative narrative project, and I'm contributing to that with a short story. But it's mostly been focused on the novels right now.
And where can people find you online?
At noahlemelson.com. That's the best place. I do have a Twitter. I still don't understand Twitter, but it's at nlemelson. So that also works. Yeah.
And apparently on Instagram, you're Erudite Goblin, it says on your press release here.
Yes, that is my old Instagram, which I still have. I don't update that much, but maybe I should.
I'm not very good at Instagram. That's the one I can't seem to quite make use of the way that you're supposed to, but oh well. There's so many different things you can spend your time on online trying to do social media. You can spend all your time on there and never actually do that thing where you sit down and type.
Some people do, man, and sometimes it works for them.
I guess so. Well, that kind of brings us to the end. So thanks so much for chatting with me.
Absolutely.
And hope you enjoyed it. I did.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks again to Noah Lemelson for that great conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. That brings us to the end of another episode of The World Shapers, but a few things to remind you of. First of all, you can find The World Shapers online at theworldshapers.com. You can find me online at edwardwillett.com, two T's on Willett. You can find Shadowpaw Press online at shadowpawpress.com. You can find The World Shapers on Twitter at The World Shapers, me on Twitter at E. Willett, two T's again, Shadowpaw Press at Shadowpaw Press, and you can find The World Shapers on Facebook at The World Shapers. You can find me on Facebook at Edward.Willett, and you can find Shadowpaw Press at Shadowpaw Press. And on Instagram, well, you won't find The World Shapers or Shadowpaw Press, but you can find me on Instagram at Edward Willett Author. The reason I mentioned Shadowpaw Press again is because it is through Shadowpaw Press that I will be publishing on November 2nd, Shapers of Worlds, Volume 2, featuring a new fiction from Kelly Armstrong, Marie Brennan, Helen Dale, Candace Jane Dorsey, Lisa Foyles, Susan Forrest, James Allen Gardner, Matthew Hughes, Helly Kennedy, Lisa Kessler, Adria Laycraft, Ira Naiman, Garth Nix, Tim Pratt, Edward Savio, Brian Thomas Schmidt, Jeremy Schall, and me, and stories by Jeffrey A. Carver, Barb Hambly, Nancy Kress, David D. Levine, S.M. Sterling, and Carrie Vaughn. Those were all second-year guests of this podcast, and as I said off the top, I'm currently contacting my third-year guests to see who would like to be on board for a Shapers of Worlds Volume 3, which I'll be trying to kickstart in the spring. However, Shapers of Worlds Volume 2 is out on November 2nd. You can get it everywhere, or directly from shadowpawpress.com if you like, but you can also find it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the places where you like to buy books. And the other thing I must mention again at the end of the program is that the World Shapers podcast is part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network.
The Saskatchewan Podcast Network is supported by Direct West. Is marketing getting in the way of running your business? Direct West has a local, expert team right here in Saskatchewan that will work with you to build your website exactly how you imagine it. Let them help you improve your online presence and head to directwest.com to learn more.
And thanks to Direct West for the sponsorship of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. Okay, that is the very end of the podcast then. I hope you'll keep coming back. I have many more great guests lined up and working on others still, so there's no end in sight. We are coming up. This is episode 95, I believe. And I'm coming up, therefore, to episode 100. I don't know if I'll do something special for episode 100. We'll see. Not quite there yet, but it's coming soon. But the one special thing I am doing is putting out Shapers of Worlds Volume 2, so look for that on November 2nd. That'll wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.